Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to SMCC Audio Messages. We are excited to be serving you wherever you are and to be continuing to reach as many people as possible and help them take their next step in full devotion and full delight in Jesus Christ. We'd love to help you personally take your next step. You can check out all the next steps that we have available at smccutah.org/next steps. If you'd like to support the incredible mission of SMCC, one of the ways you can do that is by financially partnering with us. You can find more information about this at smccutah.org/give. If you'd like to dive deeper into what SMCC is all about, you can also subscribe to the Fully Delighted podcast. Now, on to the message for today.
Thanks, Mike and Joni. Good morning, everybody. Really great to see you. Glad that you're here. Like Mike said, I'm Eric. Get to serve as one of the pastors on the team here. And before we begin, if you're brand new around here, we just hope that you enjoy yourself. I hope that what you hear today, up here today, is understandable, that it makes sense to you, that it's clear for you. And if it's not, I'll be in the lobby after service. I would love to answer any questions you have as you go at your pace here at SMCC. And if you've been here for a long time, you are probably still here because you enjoy it here, and it's been so understandable for so many years. So I'm really glad that you are here as well. This is the moment in the service where we pause for about 30 minutes and discuss something that's relevant and applicable to life, something that will be helpful and hopeful for you. And we are in the middle of a series called Trust Issues. And this series is for all of us because all of us, from time to time, have some trust issues. And if you haven't been here with us, I want to get you caught up to speed. What we've said is this: trust with God, trust with others, and trust with church. It is not like a light switch. This is what we've been saying. It is not like a light switch. A light switch is either all on or all off. And if you think of trust in your life like this, it will lead to some complications and things will be rather confusing. I did this for most of my life. I thought of trust like this. I would get into a relationship or a friendship or a partnership or take a new job, and it was like trust was all on. All right, but that got confusing, got a little bit unhealthy, because at the first sign of conflict, trust would just go all off. And I had no capacity to restore trust. I didn't know how it actually worked. And then I started to show up at church and people started to say things like, just trust God, man. Come on, trust with him is all on. And I'm like, how am I supposed to go from no faith, no trust, to full trust overnight? It wasn't possible, because it's not. And so what we've been saying in this series is that trust is nothing like a light switch. Trust is something that can grow over time. We can get better and better and better at knowing who to trust. And this series has been about equipping all of us to know what it takes to be trustworthy and to know what it takes to know who is trustworthy. And so we've been talking about that. And what we said in week one is this: trust does not begin with someone getting in front of you who you barely know and someone saying this, just trust me, okay? Trust does not work that way at all. Trust actually begins with understanding. Trust begins with someone understanding what it's like to be you, someone who wants to know what it's like to go through what you're going through, where you think this, man, they get me. They just get me. That's understanding, and it's a first step towards knowing if someone is trustworthy. Do they understand me? The second step, we talked about this last week, is this idea of intent or motivation. Not just do they know me, do they understand me, but are they for me? Do they want what's best for me? Do they love me, or are they just using me to get something from me? That type of person shouldn't be trusted. And what we've learned in the first 2 weeks is that God understands us. God absolutely understands us, and God is for us. He loves us. His intention for us is our flourishing, that we would thrive, that we would experience full delight with him. So that was the first two parts in this series. And now we're into the third part. We're going to take it just a little bit deeper. And so today's message is called this, and it's the component of trust I want to talk about. I want to talk about trustability. Trustability. I'm not sure if that's a word. I may have just made it up, but I want to talk about trustability. And trustability is this: it is the link between trust and capability. Trustability is the link between someone's capacity to meet a specific need that you have in a specific scenario that you are in that relationship. So we're using one illustration or analogy to make sense of all the parts of trust in this series, and it is the analogy of a mechanic You want a trusted mechanic, and so do I. And so we've been using this illustration. Imagine you break down in the middle of a snowstorm on your way to St. George, right there past Cedar City. I've been there before. And your car breaks down. It is scary. It's a whiteout condition. You finally get it to the mechanic. And the mechanic says, wait, you broke down on the side of I-15 in the middle of a snowstorm? I can't imagine how scary that must have been. That is difficult. It's so tough. You're like, oh, this mechanic, they're so pastoral, you know? They really understand me. And then the mechanic says this, I want to get you back on the road as quickly as possible. You have another trip coming up. We got to take care of this. Now the mechanic is for you. You're like, take my money, man. And then the mechanic says this, oh, and by the way, I've done this job on this same make and model dozens of times. It's just a timing belt. I'll have it back to you overnight. And now you are thinking their trustability is off the charts. Not only do they understand you, not only do they understand you, they are for you, and they have an ability to meet your need in the specific scenario that you're in. They have the capacity to really be trusted. And this is what we're talking about today in the third part, in the third part of this series. So there are five parts to trust. Five parts, we've looked at the first two, and we are halfway through the series. So the first part, understanding, then intent, then ability. And then over the next 2 weeks, we will do the next few, character and track record. Character is not like, man, they are such a character, okay? Character is being a person of integrity in all situations. So we'll talk about character next week, and then sort of faithfulness or steadfastness or track record in the weeks to come. So we are going to look at ability today. And a definition of ability is this. It's the capacity to deliver on a specific need. The capacity to deliver on a specific need. Because someone might understand you, and someone could be for you, but if they don't have the ability to offer what you are depending on them for in a specific situation, they are not yet to be trusted in that specific situation. Now, there's a book that has really inspired this series. I would encourage you to pick it up. It's called Trust by Henry Cloud. And the tagline is this, knowing when to give it, when to withhold it, how to earn it, and how to fix it when it gets broken. Sounds pretty relevant. If you're in our app, you can click a link and get to the book. There's a poster out front. You can pick up the book. I just sent it to someone in my family who needs this book because they need to fix it because they just broke it, okay? So I just, and they won't read it. So, you know, figures. But Henry Cloud, in his book, talks about ability in this way. I'll throw it up on the screen. This is so important. People make big trust decisions because they already trust someone in many ways. The person is caring, honest, works hard, has good values, and is understanding and pure-hearted, smart, and creative. Usually they really like the person, are already close friends, or have had great experiences with them. And these dynamics also make them trust the person. But this is a mistake. And here's why. This is a mistake because the person doesn't have the ability needed to be trusted, at least not in the specific way or context in which they are about to be trusted. Huh. So you could like them. You could have a great time when you're with them. They could be your closest of friends, but you wouldn't trust them to fix your timing belt because they don't have the capacity to meet that need. And this happens all of the time. Take a dating relationship. Dating relationship, things are so fun and so warm. They're the best person to be around. Then you get married, only to discover they don't have the ability to communicate calmly when conflict is at hand. They don't have that ability or capacity yet. And so it makes them difficult to trust when the marriage hits the fan, and it happens. Take a business that needs an employee. So the manager decides to hire their best friend. Because of course you love them on the golf course, so won't you love them in the warehouse? No, they perhaps don't have the capacity to go from forklift driver to manager. That is a different ability. It's a very different ability, okay? Take the family business, where someone just decides to promote their kid. That never happens. To promote their kid, because we like them and they need to have a job, but they don't have the real experience to do it. Listen, this happens in churches. Well, you realize Brother Joe down the aisle has a contract business. You know, is that what it's called? Construction company, okay? And you're thinking, I'm going to hire him. He loves Jesus. But he can't swing a hammer, you know? Loves Jesus, can't swing a hammer. Might not be the best guy to enter into a trusted relationship with. Put this all together. Here's what I'm saying. It is worth it to look for proof of trustworthiness. It is worth it to look for proof of trustworthiness before trusting. Jesus knew this. Jesus understood this. Jesus talked about himself and his leadership and his trustworthiness in terms of evidence, in terms of proof, in terms of looking at capacity or ability. In John 14, Jesus said this. I think it's so honest, so straightforward, so real. He says, "Believe me when I say that I am in the Father and the Father is in me, or at least believe on the evidence of the miracles themselves." He's saying, look, you don't need to trust me just because I said trust me. He's saying, look, if you're not ready to trust me at my word yet, here's what you can do. Would you look at my ability and capacity? Would you look at the evidence of the miracles that I've done and see if those miracles can earn your trust as you have seen my capacity, my ability over all things? Jesus knows that miracles are a significant amount of proof when it comes to understanding his ability, his authority, really his divinity. So looking for proof, looking for evidence in someone, especially after trust has been broken, it's not judgmental, it's wise, it is discerning. So like take my life for example, all right? You would not trust me to perform a root canal, all right? You go to my friend Dr. Workman, he'd take care of you, okay? You wouldn't trust me to slap braces on your kiddo. You'd go to my friend Dr. V. That's where I send my kiddo, okay? You would not trust me to lead a song at SMCC, all right? You would not want that. No one would want that. One time I left my mic on in the front row and I'm singing along, I'm belting it out. I'm like, who sounds terrible today? I'm like, oh, that's me, you know? Click that right off, you know? You wouldn't trust me for those things. But hopefully, over the 9.5 years that I've been here, I've earned your trust as someone who can present God's word to you in helpful and hopeful ways. Earned your trust at least to some degree that we can build a culture here where our values are embraced and experienced. And I've talked to so many of you who'd say, Eric, I would never want to do what you do. And I'm like, I understand that. Jerry Seinfeld once did a bit. He said, people would rather be, you know, in the casket than giving a eulogy. They were more afraid of public speaking than death, okay? For some of you, this would not be your thing. Look, that doesn't mean you're not trustworthy. It just means in this capacity or scenario, you perhaps haven't developed the ability to deliver. And I certainly have not developed the ability to deliver in many scenarios in life. It is okay to look for proof of trustworthiness. So our question this morning is very, very specific. Here's our question. Is there proof that God can be trusted, that they can be trusted, whoever the they is in your life? And is there any proof that this spiritual community, that this can be trusted? And this is the question I want us to process. We'll do it in three parts. We'll spend most of our time on the first aspect. Is there any proof that God can be trusted? And then we'll wrap up with the other two as it'll apply very quickly and easily. And here's where we'll begin as we begin to think about all of this. The best evidence for a God who acts, or the best proof for a God who acts, must be supernatural acts of God. And I want to explain this point because if you're a skeptic at heart like me, if you are a person of logic and reason, you're wondering, if I'm going to trust God, I need to know that there's evidence and proof that he is trustworthy. It's not a light switch where I'm just going to flip it on and all of a sudden trust him. I'm going to investigate first, and you should. And of course, evidence of a God would best be seen in acts of a God that go beyond nature. And I want to process this with four proofs. So, four proofs of God's existence, four sort of ideas that help us understand who he is, four proofs for God. I'll take you through them kind of quickly. The first would be cosmology, okay? This is Utah. It's not cosmetology, okay? Cosmology, the study of the cosmos, all right? I know this is Draper, Utah, not cosmopolitans, okay? It is cosmology. It's the study of the cosmos, miracles, resurrection, prophecy. These four things are proof of God's existence. Let's start with cosmology. If we were to study the universe, if we were to observe the universe, investigate the universe like great cosmologists have done, we would discover that the existence of the universe comes down to just either two choices. Either the universe has always been, it is the eternal thing, or there's something behind the universe, beyond the nature of the universe, something supernatural that is eternal that has always been. It is really just that. There are two options. And famed atheist, forgetting his name real quick, famed atheist Yeah, Bertrand Russell wrote a book. I remember seeing it at Powell's Bookstore in Portland, Oregon, where I grew up, Why I'm Not a Christian. Bertrand Russell wrote about this, and here's what he says about the universe. He says, the universe is just there, and that's all. The universe is just there, and that's all. This is the naturalistic, materialistic, atheistic worldview, that nature has always been. This is Bertrand Russell's point, that the universe has always been here. It has always existed. How did it get here? It just is. Sometimes Christians are critiqued for having a God of the gaps theology, that in any gap we just fill in God. That's not what we're doing here. We're looking at the appropriate conclusion of all that we know. We're looking at the appropriate conclusion from the facts. We could look at Bertrand Russell and say, this is just like atheism of the gaps. Like the universe has just always been. Is there any good evidence for that? And thankfully, over the last 200 years, great scientific work has been done to help us understand what the universe is like. And that work is saying the universe sprang into existence. The universe had a beginning. So Alexander Vilenkin, a famed cosmologist, says this. He says, scientists can no longer hide behind a past eternal universe. It hasn't just always been. It is not the eternal thing. There's something or someone behind it. Vilenkin says, there's no escape. They have to face the problem. That's the naturalistic, materialistic worldview. Those people have to face the problem of a cosmic beginning. The universe had a beginning. It is expanding. It is cooling down. It is running out of usable energy. Don't worry. It's not happening too quickly. You should be all right. And it's finely tuned, intelligently designed. And so we have to ask the question, what could make for a universe like that? If it had a beginning, it had to have had a beginner. Someone designed it. And by the way, this is exactly what we see recorded throughout the Bible. For example, Psalm 33. By the word of the Lord, the heavens were made. By the word of the Lord, the heavens were made. If you're going to trust somebody in a specific scenario, you should check for ability and capacity. If God has the ability and the capacity to speak the cosmos into existence, he can deliver on our specific needs as well. Perhaps he's someone who can be trusted. And this is incredibly reasonable, because if trust includes understanding, intent, and capacity, and we've seen that that's exactly what God has, then he is earning our trust. It's not a light switch going on. It's more like a dimmer switch where the lights grow bright, because he's showing us his ability. By the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, their starry host by the breath of his mouth. He gathers the waters of the sea into jars. Like, this is a small thing for him, because this is how supreme, how big he actually is. He puts the deep into storehouses. Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the people of the world revere him. Like, trust him. Place their faith in him. Last week, we did a word study on the word faith to discover that the best definition of that in English is this idea of trust or allegiance. He has the capacity to be trusted. How do we know that? Because he spoke the cosmos into existence. That's the argument here. For he spoke and it came to be. He commanded and it stood firm. So one massive proof that God can be trusted is his capacity to create and to sustain all things. That's cosmology. Let's dive into miracles for just a moment. Great science tells us the universe had a beginning. I'm so thankful for great science. But what I was taught in junior college is that science has disproven miracles. Now, by the way, if the universe sprang into existence, something from nothing, then that already is a miracle, because let me define miracle. Miracle is something beyond nature acting upon nature and changing nature. If something is beyond nature, it is supernature or supernatural. That's where that word comes from. Supernatural, I usually think of like magic and something mystical. No, it simply means something beyond the material world. Now, science is so helpful in helping us understand natural processes and natural causes, but it cannot speak to the issue of that which is beyond nature. It can observe nature, and therefore we can follow the observations to its logical conclusion, but it can't rule out miracles, because science can test for natural causes. By definition, a miracle is beyond nature. And only because we have science are we able to recognize when something beyond nature has happened. Only when we know that when people walk out on water, that they sink, do we understand that something significant has happened when they don't, okay? Only when we understand that water doesn't just normally turn into wine, you know, as much as you would like, probably, do we recognize that something's happened when that does happen? And only when we know that dead people stay dead do we pay attention when someone is raised to life. John in his gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, talks about this. This is what he says about miracles. What Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee, that was the water to wine miracle, was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory. And his disciples, well, they believed him. A sign is something that points to something else. It's a signal of something else. A miracle of Jesus is a signal of his ability, a signal of his capacity. And when they saw it, they believed. They trusted him partially because of his capacity to perform this miracle. We can thank science for our skepticism, and we can thank Jesus for his evidence. They fit together because they are a signpost of Jesus' divinity, of his authority, of his deity. This is incredibly important. So miracles are proof that God can be trusted. Now, let's go to the next thing, the resurrection. Sorry to let you down, but we do not have time to explore the resurrection. But I promise, if you stay at SMCC for a quarter or 6 months, for a year, you will hear us process this in so many different ways, talking about the eyewitness testimony, talking about all the possible theories of what happened to the body, talking about really how it's history's mystery, what happened to the body. We don't have time for that today, but I will say this. If God began it all, supernatural, creating all nature, then of course, raising someone to life is highly possible, okay? We'll leave it at that. But there's one I want to process a little bit more deeply because we haven't talked about it in a while at SMCC, and that is the proof of prophecy, the proof of prophecy. Here's how prophecy works in helping us understand God's capacity. Prophecy is a way to verify supernatural claims. It's a way to verify supernatural claims. There are about, we'll just go with a safe sort of number here. There are over 1,000 prophecies in the Old Testament about Jesus and his church. And these prophecies are incredible because if you are gonna predict something and it's gonna happen, you either got incredibly lucky 1,000 times over, or you have the capacity to rule and to reign, and to accomplish what you said would be done. So I want to show you what 1,000 prophecies looks like. Check this out right here. That's what it looks like. And I know you can read that from the back. I understand that. But these are just different types of prophecies that we see throughout the Bible, okay? And it's showing the link. It's showing where this link comes from Old Testament up and into the New Testament. And I know what it's like to see something like this. You're like, bro, anybody could draw that. You know what I mean? That's what I would be thinking if I were in your seats. I understand that. So let's hone in on a certain type of prophecy. Let's hone in to prophecies around Jesus' crucifixion. Roughly speaking, there are 48 of those, 48 prophecies about Jesus' crucifixion. And let's just talk about the likelihood of something like that happening without a supernatural one orchestrating it all. And let's talk a little bit about the laws of probability. The laws of probability are kind of interesting. I'm about to get over my skis here pretty quickly. I don't know math all that well, but I think I know this, okay? If the odds of something happening are 1 in 5, okay, 1 in 5, you understand that, okay? And the odds of something else happening are 1 in 10, then the odds of both of those things happening at the same time are 1 in 50, yeah, a lot of confidence. You guys are like, yeah, math's not my thing either. 1 in 50, okay, 1 in 50. This is incredible. So the odds of prophets, people who spoke for God in the Old Testament, spanning their leadership, their work, over 1,000 years, about 500 years before Jesus arrived, all of them getting it right about his crucifixion, that's out of the realm of just luck, okay? In fact, if we just take Jesus' crucifixion, and let's just go with 8 prophecies about his crucifixion, the odds of those 8 things all lining up at the same time, 1 in 10 to the 17th power. 17 zeros after a 1 with 8 things. Those 8 things could be these. We'll just go through them quickly. That he would be pierced, that he would be hung on a tree, that no bones would be broken, that he would be silent like a lamb to the slaughter during Passover as the Passover lamb, that his clothes would be torn, that they would gamble, that they would gamble over them, and that he would be offered drink. We'll just go with those 8. What are the odds that that could happen? This is incredible. To help you understand what 1 to the 10th with 17th power would be like. Take the state of Texas, for example. Things are always bigger in Texas, okay? Take silver dollars, stack them up 2 feet high across all of Texas, okay? Fly above it in a plane, put an X on another silver dollar, drop it. Stir it all up, blindfold a person, tell them they can go to anywhere in Texas, probably go to Waco for Chip and Joanna Gaines, but just, you know, go there. What are the odds that they've been down and pick it up? Same amount of odds that these prophets would have predicted all that they said about Jesus' crucifixion and that it would happen. So as we put all this together, cosmology, miracles, resurrection, and prophecy, we understand God's capacity, his ability to deliver on our specific needs, which is exactly what Colossians 1, a New Testament letter, sums up for us. Let me read this to you. Colossians 1 says this. The Son is the image of the invisible God. Jesus is fully God, revealing to us what God is like. The firstborn over all of creation. Firstborn doesn't mean he was made or he's the offspring of. It is a position of prominence, a position of supremacy and power. It's talking about his character and his identity. For in him, all things were created. Cosmology, we talked about that. Things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. This is how capable he is. Verse 17, he's before all things. Like, he's in charge of all things. He rules over all things. And in him, all things hold together. He keeps the universe spinning. He keeps our hearts beating. He keeps this thing glued so that life can continue on, that reality can be what it is. He is the head of the body, the church, our church. He's the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead. This is simply saying he is the first person to go through death and beat it, come out the other side of it, having dismantled it from the inside out. Anyone who trusts him will follow him in that. They will be made alive with him, will be with him where he is. So that in everything he might have the supremacy. This is how capable, this is how able, as we were saying earlier, this is how able he is. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him and through him to reconcile to himself all things. Here comes the cross. Whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Listen, ability when it comes to trust is someone being able to deliver on our specific needs. We cannot trust ourselves. Because in the biggest areas of life, we do not have the capacity to do this. We do not have the capacity to create all things and hold all things together. We do not have the capacity to pay for our own sin. We do not have a perfect record. We are unable to do that. We do not have the capacity to beat our enemy death, which will come for all of us. We don't have the capacity to do that. We don't have the capacity to sit in judgment on a throne ruling the world, doling out justice as it should be. We don't have the capacity to renew the heavens and the earth, all things in a way that would lead to human flourishing. We do not have any of that capacity. So we should trust the one who does. This is how it is reasonable to trust in God. It is not like we woke up one day and said, I have some warm fuzzies and some feelings. I think I should trust God. It is we have examined the evidence. We've investigated who he is. If trust includes understanding, intent, and ability, God's offered us all of it. He's earned my trust. And he's done that for so many in this room. So here's how we put it together. Jesus' sovereignty is proof of capacity. Sovereignty doesn't mean he controls us. What it means is he has the capacity to rule as he pleases, to rule as he wants, to reign as he desires, and he does. And the fact that he does this in a Colossians 1 way tells us that he has the capacity that would lead us to trust him for all of eternity. Now, for the last few minutes, this has been very theological and rather philosophical, so I'd like to bring this into a real life story in the first century. There's one story that happens in the Gospel of John, and in this story, one of the longest conversations we see with Jesus in a person, He embodies all five aspects of trust, okay? And so this story is really helpful for us in seeing how trustworthy Jesus is. It includes a woman who went to a well at noon, so full of guilt, so full of shame, she comes at noon so that no one would see her and point at her and judge her and accuse her. And Jesus shows up and he breaks down some cultural stereotypes, some religious stereotypes, some male-female stereotypes, and he asks a question. And if you remember, a question from an omniscient God is not for information, but it is for connection. By asking the question, Jesus is highlighting his desire to understand her life. And then he says in this, and we've kind of covered this, I want to give you living water so the spiritual thirst that you have can be quenched. So he's for her in his intent and his motive. And then in the story, and this is what I want us to see today in a small clip of it in the text, we see his capacity. Here's how he demonstrates to her his deity, his knowledge of her life, his ability to be sovereign for her. Picking it up in verse 16, he told her, go call your husband and come back. Go call your husband and come back. This is interesting. Verse 17, she says, I have no husband. Probably thinking, where is this going, okay? Jesus is carefully, now that through understanding and intent, her heart has been opened, he's gonna guide her with some questions that would produce truth and an awareness of his identity. Jesus said to her, you're right when you say you have no husband. The fact is you've had five husbands. The man you now have is not your husband. What you said is quite true. How did he know this? Here he is revealing to her his authority and his divinity. He has a capacity to know about her life that only a supernatural one would have. And that's how she responds. Sir, the woman said, I can see that you are a prophet. She thinks at least he's that, okay? Our ancestors worshiped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem. So she asks this spiritual question. And I want to accelerate this to the end because here's her connection with this information that Jesus has about her life, okay? Picking it up in verse 28. Then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, come see a man who told me everything I did. He has an ability and a capacity that no one else has. And so, here's what she says, could this be the Messiah? And the whole town comes out to see, could this be the Messiah? Jesus has demonstrated for her his ability, and that ability is an indicator of his capacity as fully God to deliver on a specific need. So, as we begin to apply this now, as we round the corner, we really are starting to understand how ability is crucial to trust. That's why it's called trustability. I would like to apply this with God, with others, with church, and then we'll be done. So this is what it looks like when we think about the ability of Jesus in our lives here and now. God has delivered on our specific needs for sovereignty, victory, and glory. Guys, the proof is there. We have some needs. We have a need for unconditional love. God has the capacity to offer you it. We have the need to connect to the one above it all. God has the capacity to connect with us. We have the need or the desire for that loving creator of all things to be imminent, to be so close. He has the capacity to be right here with us. We have this need to be forgiven. He offers it. We have a need for justice. He upholds it. He is it. We have a need for things to be restored. He's promised it. We have a need for all grief and sorrow to be done away with. He said he would wipe away every tear. He understands, and he has the capacity to meet our needs for sovereignty, victory over sin and death, and glory that one day we would be with him, standing, as we just sang, before his throne. Who else would we trust? There's one way I'd like to think of it. Perhaps you saw this a couple weeks back, the Baltimore Bridge accident. I'm sure you saw this. It was tragic. I started to think about this situation, and best we know, this was an accident. All right, best we know, this was an accident. The captain was well-trained. He had capacity. He had ability. What we know is that it sounds like he was a good guy. There was nothing he could do to prevent this. He called and radioed in and said, close the bridge. He knew there would be a loss of life. But in the end, when he lost capacity to control his ship, he was responsible, but he was not capable, and catastrophe happened. And I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about us, and I realized that for many of us who would like to captain our own ship, be the captain of our lives, we need to be honest that we do not have the capacity to deliver on all that we would need. And we might try. We might try to save ourselves, and we might try to hold all things together. We might try to rescue ourselves and rescue others and rescue the world and save ourselves, but we can't. And so may we just trust the one who can. God is capable of meeting your needs in the very specific scenarios that no one else can. I want to invite you to trust him because of that. But what about with others? Let's sort of talk about how this affects our lives and affects relationships. Here's what it looks like with others. Because ability can grow, someone's ability, their capacity can grow. We might withhold trust now. We might withhold trust now, but offer it later after proof of growth. So before you trust a specific person in a specific scenario, we should assess their ability to see if they are trustworthy. So maybe hiring your friend is not the best idea, okay? Because perhaps they don't have the ability. Or maybe you getting a little more education and experience is exactly what you need to take on the next promotion, and your boss isn't a bad guy for not giving it to you yet. Maybe growing in your ability would be the thing that would make you ready to be trusted for the new position. Perhaps in a marriage that's strained, a little bit of separation could allow each party to grow in their ability so they could come back and have a heavy conversation. We need to give grace and patience to people so that they can grow into the ability that we would love for them to deliver on in a specific scenario. We give grace, we give patience, and then we wait and we evaluate. We give them some time to grow. Perhaps reassigning crucial aspects of a job to another person is best before trust erodes in the person who's not capable of providing that. This is how ability fits into everyday life. Now, let's wrap up with this one. What about with church? What about the spiritual community? We've assessed how to know if God is trustworthy. Is there any proof of that? We've assessed what this looks like with others. We want to give them time and space for their ability to grow. We want to grow in our ability. But what about with others? I'll say it like this. Before trusting a church, and I understand that for many in the room, perhaps, trust in a spiritual community, it's been shattered. And you're wondering, how would I ever know that there's a spiritual community worth trusting again? I've likened it to getting out of a relationship where trust was shattered, and you don't know that you can even make a decision about who's trustworthy again. This series is giving you the tools, equipping you to know how to trust. So a spiritual community can be trusted if they do this. Before trusting a church, look for proof of delivering on our specific needs. What are those needs? Biblical teaching, equipping, reaching, and leading. Do they teach the Bible in a way that honors God's word, in a way that's helpful and hopeful? Not just the parts they like, but all of the Bible. Do they teach that to you in a helpful and hopeful way? That is so important. Do they equip you? Meaning, do they help you take your next step towards maturity? We just say in the areas of head, heart, and hands, towards full devotion. Are they equipping you, giving you a way to take part in the Great Commission to make disciples? Are they reaching the city? People who do not yet know about Jesus, they're creating space and opening the doors for them. And is there accountability and transparency in the leadership structures and how they lead the place? And if all that is in place, they're highlighting their ability, their capacity as a spiritual community to be trusted by you. And I hope you're finding that here. So here's the bottom line as we think about ability and how it relates to trust. Trust accordingly based on ability. Look for ability first before you trust in a specific scenario. Trust accordingly based on one's ability and grow in your ability. Grow in your ability to be trusted accordingly. Let's continue to grow in our ability so that people would trust us. So may we as a church, may we be people who continue to see God's capacity and trust him more and more for the rest of our lives. May we continue to be people who are learning what it looks like to offer relational needs to people and so be trusted in our relationship with them. And may we be a church that can be trusted because we have the capacity to meet people right where they are and introduce them to the Jesus of the Bible. Now, there's one event coming up. I'd love for you to sign up for it. Men, it's Man Camp. Women, it's the Women's Weekend. One event, those events, we'll put those together for us. We will see Jesus for who he really is. We will connect with others, growing in our ability to offer relational needs. And people will hear about who Jesus is. Get signed up for that and be a trust builder. Grow in your ability to be trusted. And as you do that, we will all grow as a spiritual community that can be trusted in this city. Let me pray for us and we'll sing about Jesus. God, thanks for a time to walk through a conversation like this. We were a little all over the place today, from some heavy philosophical concepts to practical real life things. And I just pray now we would understand trustability, how ability is crucial to trusting anyone, but also trusting you. And I just pray for those of us who are skeptics at heart, maybe doubting some things, that we would now have a reasonable way to understand if you are trustworthy by looking carefully at your ability. And through that, we can discover you're worthy of our lives, you're worthy of our trust. We believe in you because you're capable of holding our lives. So we do that now. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you again for listening to today's message. If you enjoyed this hopeful and helpful content, we'd love for you to subscribe and share an episode with a friend. Also, if you can please do us a huge favor and leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening on, we'd really appreciate it. We'll see you again next week.